No mai haere mai, ki tēnei hōtaka, welcome to the panel on RNZ National, well, the case that kick-started the global Me Too movement. Shock news today about Harvey Weinstein's rape conviction overturned, that in just a moment. Also today, the issues of whether the fast-track bill could lead to pork barrel politics, we talk about that, and new research, Kiwis over 65 staying in paid work longer to transition into retirement. Let me ask you, are you 65 plus and still working? We've had a bit of response on this already. Here's one. I am 72. I'm working full-time managing Auckland Council's farms. Interesting. And the average retirement age here is 67. Also today, Gen Z apparently in danger of giving up table manners, like no phones at the table and open mouth eating. So is table etiquette still important? What do you insist on? Do napkins belong on the lap or tucked in your shirt? Text me on that, 2101. Thank you, Phil. We can email the panel at rnz.co.nz. Well, Phil O'Reilly, the Managing Director of RNG Partners, global business leader. Kia ora, Phil. Good to have you here.
Fantastic to be here, mate.
And Kirsty Cameron, editor of the New Zealand Listener. Kirsty, kia ora.
Kia ora.
All right, Kirsty and Phil with me today. Now, 7 years ago, October 2017, the wave of people who posted hashtag MeToo started near and far from people we knew and people we only knew from the screen. It turned into a formidable global survivor-led movement. Harvey Weinstein's rape conviction, the landmark case that fueled this movement, has been overturned by New York's highest court. It divided the judges 3-4, not a unanimous decision. It was mostly overturned, not because he didn't commit the crimes, but the trial judge made an error by allowing several other women to testify, even though their assault claims were not part of the official case against him. With us, Catherine McPhillips, clinical psychologist and executive director of Help Auckland, an organisation preventing sexual abuse and supporting survivors. Kia ora, Catherine.
Kia ora.
Were you shocked to hear this today?
No, not shocked. Very disappointed, but to be honest, not surprised.
What sort of message does this send?
Yeah, I mean, it sends a message, really, that our society is still divided on this because the 4-3 judgment is not unanimous. But, you know, the message it sends really to the general public is that it's not worth it. You know, don't bother going through all of that trauma, really, of engaging with the criminal justice system, because even if you get that outcome that you sought and you get a guilty verdict from a jury, as the process is, you know, works, you know, that can still be appealed and overturned. So it will be very, very disheartening for those who were involved with this case, but also those who are in the midst of similar processes now.
Let's bring in our panel. Kirsty, you would probably have reported on this. I mean, I can't recall a movement as significant as Me Too in, what, the last 20 or so years. What are your thoughts or questions?
I hope, and I don't think it'll be a setback for Me Too. The man is still guilty. He's still got jail time to serve in California. So I think this is obviously a judicial disappointment to a lot of people. And it's my understanding is it's a technicality about the evidence these women were able to give in court.
The so-called Molyneux case.
Yeah, Molyneux case, which is fascinating in itself. Hadn't heard that term before, the Molyneux case. But I think women won't stop speaking up and speaking out because of that. I mean, we know we've got a lot of problems in New Zealand and Australia. They've had a shocking murder fairly recently of a woman who's I don't know if he was a former partner she'd had a relationship with him. He was essentially let out on bail and shouldn't have been, and he killed her. He's been arrested. So women who are assaulted, women who, the ultimate obviously prize is being killed. There's a lot of work that needs to be done and a lot of reporting that needs to be continued. And I don't think we should let things like this court case set that back.
Well, you're in this sector, Catherine. Well, how do you respond to Kirsty?
Well, I love to hear what Kirsty says. You know, let's hope that it doesn't set the sector back. And it's great to hear people in the media like Kirsty saying that, you know, we have still got a lot of work to do in this space, because we certainly do.
Phil?
Yeah, Catherine, I'm probably a little more hopeful than you about it, but I mean, I'm not a woman at risk in that sense, obviously. So the for me, I thought the horse had bolted a long time ago. I woke up this morning, read that story, and thought, oh my God, you know, oh my God, don't start me the US legal system. And then I read the story, and it was this point about that it was a technical matter. He hadn't been exonerated of his crime, and in fact, he's still going to stay in jail for quite a while. It demonstrates a little bit about American justice, that if you're wealthy, you can carry on with it. That's an important point to note, of course, and he did, and he still maintains his innocence, I see. So that's where he's at, and he'll no doubt continue to appeal. That's the nature of the US legal system. The reason I think times have moved on, though, is that it's changed the debate. I think it definitely has, you know, and particularly in terms of powerful men. And my sense is, you know, since that time, there's been a number of other cases, not just for women, but also, as we now know, for pedophilia, which has really, I think, changed the nature of the debate so much that I don't think we could bring it back, even if he had been found not guilty on some more substantive case. I think it's changed behaviour in our society, and I think that's a fantastic thing. Of course, people are still going to get away with it, but I think the risk piece for that's changed a lot.
Well, Catherine, picking up on what Phil's saying there, how do you think it's changed New Zealand society? Because I can recall quite clearly, even that week, I mean, a lot of even friends of mine that were just posting on Twitter, just one phrase, hashtag Me Too. And that's all they posted. And then you had a specific team set up. I think it was for Stuff, who did was it Ellie Moore?
Ellie Moore did fantastic things and continues to advocate.
Who did major investigations across sectors in our society. How do you think that Me Too changed New Zealand's society?
It certainly made it easier for people to speak up. I think it made people more aware of some of the more subtle forms of sexual harassment and more aware of what to be looking out for, you know, in the workplace. But there's kind of other parts of our society, I think, it hasn't changed. And, you know, this is what we often see, that while we make headway in one part, we're kind of going backwards in the other. And, you know, that kind of backwards space in New Zealand is really around dating apps and people agreeing to go on dates and then it being thought that they've consented to sex if they've agreed to a date, and not only that, often that they have agreed to rough sex what's called rough sex if they've agreed to a date. So, you know, we see a massive influence of continually escalating pornography, which denigrates women and others, you know, playing into those ideas of male entitlement. So I don't think we've broken the back of those ideas of male entitlement to other people's bodies yet, even though I totally agree with Phil that we have changed that narrative in all sorts of spaces in our world, but we haven't got the whole way yet.
What do you think, because we saw some of this, what Catherine's talking about, in the Grace Mullane trial?
Yes, and there's a new documentary, I think, coming up
there
on
is.
Grace Mullane.
Yeah.
Well, again, that was the defence there, that she had agreed to rough sex, which, you know, to Catherine's point, this has not gone away. Okay, it's better now, perhaps, for women in the workplace, but it certainly doesn't bring any comfort to Grace Mullane's family.
Yeah, I think it's morphed. I think that's right. Yeah. Hearing what Catherine has to say about bullying online, all that sort of stuff, I agree that is an emerging challenge and one that we just need to sort out, including trying to make sure that kids don't, but young women and young men don't spend so much time online and have other ways of interacting with each other and having good parents and so on. One thing I'm interested in, actually, Catherine, is what changes do you think still need to be made to the legal system? Because, of course, one of the big challenges with the Harvey Weinstein thing, and it happens in New Zealand too, is that, you know, you're subject to the rules of evidence and you get challenged about your morality and what you were wearing and all that sort of stuff, which I think just find unbelievably outrageous that sort of stuff goes on. No is no, you know. But so is that still going on in New Zealand? Have we turned the corner there in terms of the way in which we do trials and get evidence and that sort of thing?
We've made some changes. So, you know, we've trained some judges, and so the courts might feel more human for victims, I think, in some cases. But again, we've still got a long way to go, because We're finding that although we have a section in our Evidence Act which precludes people talking about someone's prior sexual experience, it's not that hard for lawyers to get around that. So, yeah, we've still got a lot of that going on, and the basis of most trials is still the credibility of the victim, but that's what gets attacked. So, you know, we'd really like to see a complete overhaul so it's a judge-run trial with two trained jurors where judges ask the questions to actually try to establish the truth of what happened rather than it being this kind of competitive adversarial fight to undermine the credibility of the witness. So we'd like to see a complete overhaul of that process.
Just finally, Catherine, do you think there might be a backlash against the hashtag MeToo movement for those who might think, oh gosh, he perceived to have gotten away with it? What do you think?
Yes, absolutely, because although your panellists, you know, understand that this is a technicality, it's not somebody saying he didn't do that. That's the same with every not guilty verdict that we get. It's not actually saying he didn't do it, it's saying it's not proved to a sufficient standard. And yet the general public does understand those things as not guilty. You know, we deal with that frequently. So yes, I think there is a risk of a backlash, and I hope that, you know, those people who understand what it really means can keep talking out when they hear that kind of backlash talk and help people to understand the reality.
All right, Catherine Phillips, kia ora, thank you for your time. That's Catherine Phillips, a clinical psychologist and exec director of Help Auckland. Interesting, isn't it? Because that really touched the across since Me Too, Phil, a lot of business communities, the legal sectors, a couple of very high profile legal fraternities involved in this. So it really made quite an impact, didn't it?
It was the end of this idea. Well, it hasn't quite ended, I suspect, but it was the end of this idea that if something really bad happened, you just let the person walk away and resign and we won't say anything about it and, you know, all that sort of stuff. And I remember having a conversation with people saying, to you know, senior people to say, actually, that was never okay and it's not okay now that you simply keep it quiet and let the person leave. Dilworth's a good example, not a dissimilar example where similar things happened. And so if we can get a culture which says you will be held to account, actually, you're going to be held to account, even years later, that's not a bad culture to have, I think.
Very good. It's 21 past six. A lot coming in regarding will you retire? Now, if you are working over 65, what do you do? Why do you do it? I'm over 67, have to carry on working another 10 years to fix up my cottage as I had more pay cuts and pay rise over the years. And I often work 7-day weeks, but then I got a lot less than many people. I'm a carer in Wellington. So, yeah, plus 65. What do you do? Are you still working? 2101, the panel. You can email me, thepanel@rnz.co.nz. Now, the issue of fast-track consenting continues to gather news headlines. Minister Chris Bishop said in an opinion piece that New Zealand has become an obstruction economy, that it shouldn't take 8 years to consent a wind farm. We had a critic from an environment angle the other week, the other issue being whether this process could lead to pork barrel politics and would put the power in the hands of too few. Now, one of the firms approached about the government's new fast-track consenting bill has a part owner and director whose other company has donated $55,000 to the New Zealand First Party and MP Shane Jones, reported by Thomas Coughlin in today's Herald. With us, Michael Swanson. He's a PhD candidate in New Zealand politics at the University of Otago. He's been taking a look over this. Michael, welcome.
Thanks for having me.
Now, on this case, no one that I just read out, no one's suggesting anything inappropriate has happened. But to that issue, do you think there are enough checks and balances in this fast-track consenting bill?
I think we've had a real history of a really slow process, and you can look at that through the infrastructure development over the past 30 years. It has been painfully slow, but this has almost switched it in the opposite direction. It's kind of flipped it 180 degrees, and so there's questions that we still won't know until it actually happens about what these ministers are actually basing a lot of their judgments on, who's actually checking in on this, and what some of the added checks and balances are going to be, because at this point it is still a bit of a question mark in a lot of those spaces.
Yeah, what questions do you have, Kirsty?
Well, it's interesting that with these, isn't it, that many of these roads seem to lead back to Shane Jones, and it was quite interesting to reread Chris Bishop's old quote on this. Look, we're a really small country, so I do think there are obviously inherent issues, and I'm sure my learned colleague here...
learned, really.
So you're business insight on this, but I'm just think with it's a problematic bill, what's being proposed, but in a small country, it's always going to be someone's brother-in-law's sister's best friend's business, because we've got that 2 degrees of separation. So that it's going to have to be crystal, crystal clear, I think, in what is consented with whom and who the players are. And it all has to be open for public scrutiny.
Okay, Michael?
Yeah, I completely agree. I think it's absolutely right that in this country, and especially in particular sectors, it's a very small community. It is a very small space, and everybody knows each other. It's that whole, you know, out in the globe, it's probably 6 degrees. In New Zealand, it's more like 2 degrees of separation.
Phil?
Yeah, I think I get a bit worried about this too, Michael. And I think the tonic to the particular issue that's been raised today is that it's now out. I mean, that is the tonic, you know, public publicity and, you know, the light of media attention is really key here. And so the media's done a good job to say, well, actually, this is linked.
We do quite often do a good job.
Exactly right, and it's sometimes it's true. But you know, this is what should be happening in a democratic society. And I dare say, Shane Jones will recuse himself or will make some statement about that, and that's entirely appropriate. I agree also with the point about 2 degrees of separation. I've been on 8 million. Government working groups of one sort or another for various governments over the years, the latest one on university reform, it's just been, we've just started that work. Am I conflicted? I guess so. I went to Auckland University and I make a donation to them for some promising students. Is that a conflict? I don't know, but I've declared it and it's sitting in the declarations register. There it is. That's what I do.
Right.
So you get the idea. So if someone wants to challenge that to say, well, you're not being fair here because of that, well, okay, let's have it. So secrecy is the problem. Having said all of that, Michael, I completely agree with you that we do have a problem that the Resource Management Act has become rather the Don't Do Anything with Resources Act. Mm-hmm. And I think it's been misused over the years a bit. For those who want to have a political conversation about whether we should mine or whatever it might be, they don't have a conversation politically about that. What they do is they take some company to court and put them through court for years and years and years and cost them millions of bucks. Now, whether that's fair enough or not, what it leads, I can assure you, is to other investors in completely disparate sectors going, wow, New Zealand's too hard. Mm-hmm. We're not going to invest here. So the whole thing needs to be defibrillated. Something needs to change. And even, as you know, Labor and the Greens thought that last time through. So the current situation's not right. Is it right that we defibrillate it with this kind of process that's been going on now? Well, okay, I'd be prepared to accept it. I am prepared to accept it, so long as it's temporary, so long as as much checks and balances are there as possible, and that we move to a proper process just as quickly as we can.
Well, three ministers having final sign off.
I don't think that's a permanent response. I don't think that's a permanent situation that's going to be any good at all.
Michael?
No, I completely agree. I don't think you can have so much power for decisions being on the shoulders of three ministers. That is not the point of Parliament. That is the point of using the whole Parliament, putting through select committee processes, having different systems in place to actually shed a bit of sunlight on all of this, to make sure that the right issues on the table, and that it's not just, in this case, three men in Wellington who make decisions on multi-billion-dollar projects.
So here's, I mentioned this earlier, what do you think of this? This is David Farrer. He proposed as a solution this, quoting, a condition of consent applications should be applicants have to detail at risk of criminal penalty all dealings they've had with ministers, MPs, staff in the last X number of years. And if there had been any donations by them or associate parties. So that's one possible solution. I'm looking for solutions here, Michael.
I think it's a very smart solution, and it's to what Phil mentioned, it's really just being as transparent as possible, and this is one way to do it. If you are required to actually list your conflicts, list all those different interests that you have, and in these cases, actually, if these companies or associates connected to these companies have to actually declare donations and connections to ministers and ministers' offices and MPs, that is one way. Yeah. And it's a similar sort of thing in the lobby space as well. And there's some good work being done by in some areas of the lobbying world by the likes of Holly Bennett, who is trying to make it a more transparent place. And it's people like that that we need to have in there to actually open up some of these doors and let some fresh air in.
Well, we've got someone with a swipe card to Wellington right now on the program.
Used to. I gave it in. No, I handed it in. No, it was... God, I had it for years. I hardly ever used it.
Right, okay. Final comment, Kirsty?
I thought, Michael, that was interesting. You know, bring it back to lobbyists. And what we don't have here in New Zealand is any kind of stand-down period on former ministers or MPs going into lobbying. So we've got some pretty high-powered people now out in the private sector. I don't know how this will play out, but I think that's one of the many questions we need to be addressing.
All right. Michael, kia ora, very good. Thank you for being with us. That's Michael Swanson, PhD candidate. He's looked over this. He does politics at Otago University. They keep coming through here. Wallace, I'm in the 25, working part-time to keep above water. I'm 67, female, single, in rental and paid below the living wage. I'm in a professional medical area of work and probably work until 70 if I can. Not by choice, but by need. Hard worker. So keep them coming. If you are above 65 and still work, what do you do? Why do you do it? Text me 2101. Another comment here. Fast track is just a means of wrecking our environment. They don't care, says Phil in Auckland. 6:30, time for headlines.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. Start getting your best night's sleep in these sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. Try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, get 15% off your first order at bollandbranch.com. Code BUTTERY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.